Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. We're now joined by David K. Johnston, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times investigative reporter who spent 40 years exposing collusion between government officials and private sector entities as they enrich the rich and ignore the consequences for middle-class and working Americans. His latest book is Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. His new book out late this year is The Fine Print. He also is a professor of law and business at Syracuse University. Welcome to Background Briefing, David K. Johnston.
Well, thank you for having me on again, Ian.
I take it you caught the 60 Minutes piece on last Sunday on how corporate America doesn't pay any taxes by and large, and a lot of them are using these shells in Switzerland that are nothing more than a post office box. My question, I guess, is where's the outrage?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, one of the featured guests was my colleague at Tax Notes, where I write a column, Marty Sullivan, who's an economist. And he was basically defending this, essentially, when we decided that we're going to have a global economy and that we're going to allow parasitic countries, the Caribbean islands that I played a big role in getting companies to no longer do business with, something they mentioned on the show in the context of the words perfectly legal. Some of the European countries, notably Switzerland and Liechtenstein, have come along and said, well, we'll adapt our laws to you, and so you have companies that claim now to be Swiss, even though they do nothing but rent an office or a post office box there and continue to do almost all of their leadership activities here in the U.S.
So what did you make of the Cisco CEO, who was the only CEO who agreed to appear? I mean, everybody does this, and GE apparently has the best accounting division in the world that makes the IRS look like a bunch of rubes. But the Cisco CEO, he was saying that he didn't like parking, I think he said, $30 or $40 billion a year or something abroad. He'd much prefer to return it to the United States, but on the condition that there's a kind of universal flat corporate tax.
Well, actually, they want a repeat of something that happened in 2004. President Bush signed something called the Jobs Creation Act, and companies, notably Pfizer, the maker of Viagra, companies brought back about $93 billion of profits offshore and paid virtually no tax. They paid a 5% tax on it. The problem is it really should have been called the Jobs Destruction Act of 2004. Senator John Ensign, a Republican of Nevada, promised 660,000 jobs. The White House, the Bush White House, promised that there would be hundreds of thousands of jobs. In fact, as soon as the bill was passed and Pfizer got its money virtually tax-free, they began firing people, and they have fired more than 40,000 people since then. The other large beneficiaries of the plan who got billion-dollar-plus tax savings also, as soon as the law passed, began firing people. This is nonsense that these companies will do this. And it's also, Ian, very troubling that what they do is they take advantage of these loopholes and weaknesses in the tax code to earn the profits offshore by artificial means. There's no real business activity going on in the places that they're earning these profits. It's just paper transactions. And then they say, we want to bring the money back. Well, they don't need to bring it back. They can borrow against it here, and they do that. And when they do that, they get a tax deduction for it, which means they pay less tax and you and I have to make up the difference. But why would we reward bad behavior?
How, then, are they getting away with it? My sense is that one of the great paradoxes in our politics is that the only energy appears to be on the far right with the Tea Party. They were propelled into existence by their outrage over Wall Street. And now, as their legislators have emerged in the new Republican Congress, all they seem to care about is getting rid of Elizabeth Warren and the only watchdog that we have on Wall Street, and basically ignoring how these big American corporations don't pay any tax.
Well, remember that the people who call themselves the Tea Partiers don't even understand that the Boston Tea Party was not a protest against high taxes. It was a protest against tax favors for the politically connected friends of King George. It was actually a protest against a tax exemption and the imposition of a monopoly, and also taxation without representation. The important point to understand is that we have the best Congress corporate America can buy. because it's corporate America's money that finances contributions. We just had the Chief Justice of the United States this week. Justice Roberts said during questioning of a lawyer appearing before him that it was wrong, in essence, to have a level playing field when it came to campaign contributions. He said, so what you want to do is level the playing field. And he made it very clear he thinks that that's wrong. This should be very troubling to people, and I would encourage people to go to nytimes.com and read Adam Liptak's story about this that ran on Tuesday. This is a practice in this country that we are seeing increasing in power. We are corporatizing everything. We are giving unlimited power to corporations, and we're doing it through the Supreme Court, Roberts, Scalia, and Thomas in particular, who say they are originalists. And yet, at the time our Constitution was adopted, corporations were only allowed to exist for very limited purposes, for limited periods of time, and they couldn't operate generally across state lines. Now, they can operate anywhere they want in the world, and no originalist could have possibly foisted on us with integrity the Citizens United decision that has increased and basically said, without limit, corporations can give money to influence the outcome of elections.
Well, one of the extraordinary things that's happening in terms of corporate power and the laws of the land empowering them to essentially run our politics and dominate our society is back in the 1880s, there was the famous case of Santa Fe Railroad.
Santa Clara County and San Mateo County versus the Southern Pacific Railroad.
Southern Pacific Railroad, which applied the 14th Amendment to corporations, making them persons in law with the protections of the 14th Amendment meant for freeing slaves.
But there was an important qualifier in that, Ian, and it was Justice Rehnquist, later Chief Justice Rehnquist, certainly no raging liberal, who in a dissent in 1977 in a case called Bellotti said that the Santa Clara decision gave corporations the property rights of individuals. That is, you could go to court over taxes or regulations, things that affected the value of your property. But he said if the government was to grant political rights to corporations, we would rue that day because a corporation is not a natural person and it doesn't have political rights. Well, that's what this Supreme Court has done. It has imbued corporations with political rights as opposed to property rights, and that's a disaster for the country. The Citizens United decision, the one that says unlimited campaign contributions, just have to not bribe people. Citizens United is to the expansion of corporate power what the Big Bang was to the singularity. It is the entire universe.
Well, it started out with the 14th Amendment back in the 1880s. Now Citizens United has applied it to the First Amendment, and there's an AT&T case before the Supreme Court that's lucky to give them protection under the Fourth Amendment. I mean, they've got the whole enchilada.
Yes, and the public has been sold on this idea that if we don't give companies what they want, we won't have jobs. You know, corporations per se are very good, efficient vehicles for creating wealth, conducting business. The problem is, because they're not natural persons, you have to control them. And whatever the rules are, guess what? They'll pretty much comply, as long as you enforce them. And if you say there are no rules, well, they're not people, so they are completely amoral. So they will do whatever they want to do to make money. And if that means destroying America, they'll do it.
Let me remind the audience again, if I may. I'm speaking with David K. Johnston, the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times investigative reporter, author of Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, and a forthcoming book, The Fine Print. So what do we do about this, given the caveat that we are not living in a politically active time, that the left and center are moribund and the only people that are out there making noise are on the far right, and they have essentially ended up being shills for corporate America? Where's the pushback going to come, and what would you want to see, David K. Johnston?
Well, I think that to get balance in our society, the most important thing going on right now is what's happening in Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, Rhode Island, New Jersey, those states where governors are trying to get rid of unions. For the last 30 years, the average income of the bottom 90% of Americans has gone up 1%. So for every dollar people made per person back in 1980, in 2008 they made a dollar and a penny. At the top, people are making, depending on which category they're in, $3, $4, or $5 for every dollar they were making back in 1980, and their taxes are much, much lower. One of the reasons that's happened is that the Reagan administration began getting rid of unions. And in a union, because people organize and collectively bargain and have both information and power, they make more money. Well, getting rid of private sector unions has driven down the wages not just of people who used to be in unions, but all the people who got raises because companies wanted to keep unions out or they were above the level of the union, and it's affected about 80% of workers. If you get rid now of the public sector unions, the ones that represent teachers and nurses, and by the way, the Wisconsin newspaper websites are full of comments about the thugs from the teachers union, the thugs from the nurses union. If you get rid of those, you can further drive down wages because employers will no longer be faced with the prospect that my secretary might leave to go to government because they have maybe not better pay, but better fringe benefits, better health care. And this fight going on, particularly in Wisconsin, is very crucial, and I think we're going to know within a year or two, we are either going to be a completely corporatized society, or we're going to get pushback. And people have to decide whether they're going to put an effort into this or not, whether they care or not. If they don't care, if they think, well, I'm doing well enough, what the heck, then, we will just live in a society completely dominated by the values of corporations. And remember, a corporation's value is very simple. It's there to make money for its shareholders and to pay the managers who run it well. That's its only purpose.
Well, they've certainly done a good job in using this whole notion of globalism as an excuse for downsizing America through outsourcing jobs and eviscerating the middle class and reducing the wages of working Americans who, you know, since Reagan have been living off credit and not had any pay raises since the 1970s. It seems that that is the notion that we will end up competing with Bangladesh, and that's our destiny.
Oh, exactly. What we're doing is we are lowering the standard of living and the wages in America. And the biggest academic advocate of globalization in America, the most influential academic advocate, is a professor at Harvard named Danny Roderick. He read an article recently by a couple of proponents of this who said, well, this is going to cause the growth of the U.S. economy to double or triple because of all our trade with China and Korea. And Roderick is a very honest guy, and he sat down and ran the numbers and then wrote a paper saying that's just not true. So what does he say will happen? Well, he says that by the year 2025, 15 years from now, 14 years from now, the U.S. economy will be 0.1% larger because of our globalization policies. In other words, you won't notice, except for all the people who lost their jobs. The total economy will be 0.1% larger, 1/1,000th larger, and we're paying all this pain for that? Does that make any sense? Millions of people out of work, the misery, the inability to get national health care that every other modern country has for a 1/1,000th increase in our economy?
Well, David K. Johnson, the other hoax that's being hoisted, of course, is the deficit hoax. Any economist will tell you that during a recession, you need to go into deficits, you need to stimulate your economy. However, the deficit hawks have won over the media and these billionaires on Wall Street who engineered huge tax breaks for themselves, like Pete Peterson, are pushing this canard. But I guess somebody, again, I'm looking for some pushback here. I wish our president would step up on this one.
Not going to happen.
Well, but the 2 points are, one, you've got to haul these corporations before the court of public opinion and say, you guys should pay taxes just like us. You know, if you corporations want to have all the benefits of the Bill of Rights, then you should have the responsibilities like we do and pay taxes like ordinary Americans do. And two, the entire tax system, if it were reformed, would have enormous amount of money coming into the Treasury. We wouldn't have a problem with Social Security, not that we really do, and we'll be back in surplus in no time.
Ian, you're exactly right. Let me put that in ordinary people's language so people understand this. Imagine that you're young and you're starting out, you get married, and you buy a house, and it's a big expenditure to buy this house. And because of where the house is, you have to have two cars, so you went out and got in debt to buy a second car. And all of a sudden you discover, unplanned, you're pregnant. Okay? And now your older car dies. Now, if you followed the Republican philosophy of what to do here, you would quit your job and lose the House. But instead, what you would do in real life is you'd say, well, I don't like this. It's going to be tough, but we're going to have to borrow money to buy a second car so we can both go to work, so we can take care of the baby and pay for the house. And when you have a collapse of demand, that's what we have. All these people who've lost their jobs don't have any money to buy anything. The only way to get it back is to have government do that demand. You then have some debt, and you manage that debt in the future through future economic growth. Debt relative to the economy was bigger than it is now at the end of World War II. We think nothing of the debt from World War II now. It's just minute. And by the way, who ran up all this debt? George Bush in 8 years doubled our federal debt. Of the debt that was in place when Obama took office on January 20th, 2009, 75% of it was run up by Ronald Reagan and the two Bushes. And his first budget had a smaller deficit than George Bush's last budget. He had a budget plan that was going to lead to smaller and smaller deficits. And then the Republicans said, oh, no, we have to continue the Bush tax cuts, plus raise taxes on 51 million poor working Americans. One out of three working Americans gets a tax increase this year, averaging $121, that Obama went along with, that the Republicans insisted on, whereas highly paid workers get a $4,200 tax cut plus the extension of the existing Bush tax cuts. So this creation of this problem we have now with the deficit is caused by the very people who say, oh, it's terrible what Obama and the Democrats want to do. And one last point, if we were to get rid of our current sick care for profit and replace it with a modern health care system like every one of our economic competitors has, the entire federal deficit goes away. It takes about 8 years, but it completely disappears because we're now spending 18% of our economy. 18 cents out of every dollar in our economy is going to health care. If your car costs you 18 cents of your paycheck to fix it up so it could keep running, you think you might buy a new car?
What would a, you know, getting rid of all the loopholes and having simplified tax and forcing the corporations to pay their fair share, what would that do?
Well, first of all, higher taxes on businesses protect jobs, lower taxes destroy jobs. And I know that's counterintuitive, but here's how that works. Imagine you're the owner of a business and you're worth a couple billion dollars. And your wife comes home one day and says, darling, I've got to have this Modigliani painting. It's going to be $85 million. Well, if the tax rate's 50%, you got to draw $170 million out of the business to pay the tax and then pay for the painting. And you're going to say, sweetheart, I love you, but I'm sorry. I'm not going to take $170 million out of the business and pay twice for this painting. But if the tax rate, what it is now, it's 15%, you go, oh, well, it's only $100 million then. I take out $100 million, I give the government 15, and I get the painting on the wall, and my wife is happy. Remember how John McCain couldn't remember if he and his wife had seven or nine houses? America was not like this before Reaganism, and higher taxes basically coerce, and I won't beat around the bush about that, higher tax rates coerce businesses into reinvesting in the business, and that creates more jobs. Low taxes encourage them to withdraw from the business for unproductive reasons, like a fourth or fifth or ninth mansion or an extra oil painting to hang in the living room, and that destroys jobs. We need to start thinking about how do we build our economy? That doesn't mean to be against trade, but the rules under which we have trade matter. You don't have to be in favor of the current rules we have, which benefit only the financier class and the rural poor of China.
Well, David, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, but I'm sure our audience appreciates this conversation as much as I do, and thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles.
Well, I appreciate the audience. Thank you, Ian.
I have been speaking with David K. Johnson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times investigative reporter. His latest book is Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, and his forthcoming book is The Fine Print. He's a professor of law and business at Syracuse University. Let's take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about California's budget impasse. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car, I'll tax the street. If you drive to six, I'll tax your seat. If you get to